Then what you want to do, especially if you're, you know, at the time where you're ready to apply to colleges, you need to honestly look at yourself and say, do I meet these metrics? Not only do I meet them, but am I exceeding them, really? As far as a resume goes, as far as the strength of my personal essay and that goes, do I feel like I, in my opinion, like I am exceeding what this school's typical applicant does so that I can feel super confident in sending in a competitive application? So the type of person that should consider ED is somebody that feels really strongly, A, about that school, like this is where I want to go. I'm showing you are where I want to go. That gives them an edge. But then also, I have really prepared myself to send you a competitive application.
We're dropping this episode during college application season. But if you are listening at a different time of year or have a younger high schooler, don't tune out. This episode has something for everyone and will guide your teen's college-bound journey as early as 10th grade. While college application deadlines range from as early as October 15th in the senior year into the spring, there is often a competitive advantage to your teen applying early. Early action, early decision, restrictive early action, single choice early action, or early decision two. Confused yet? Well, you aren't alone. My guest, Julie Kelsheimer, is a college advisor just outside New York City. She's going to clear up your confusion and give great advice on helping your student to decide if and when they should submit early applications. Julie supports students in focusing their time and energy instead of spreading themselves too thin and causing undue stress by casting a wide net to too many colleges. I'm Lisa Marker Robbins, and I want to welcome you to College and Career Clarity, a Flourish Coaching production. Let's dive right in to a great conversation. Julie, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, I'm thrilled to have you. And it's funny, when we first connected, I have for a while been thinking, like, this is one of the most confusing topics. And I wanted to find a guest who could speak to this. And then we connected, and I'm like, I think this is the guest to help us clear the confusion.
Oh, I hope I can do that. I'm honored. Thanks.
So let's start with, I intentionally tried to overwhelm everybody in that intro, just to say, like, stick with this because it's so confusing. Even students I find that I've worked with for months, they'll still, like, months later, after we've had a very clear discussion about what you and I are going to talk about today, they'll go like, can you remind me again which one is binding? And in my brain, I'm like, I know I've said this four times. And it's not anything against those kids. It's just that confusing. And this is probably going to be one of those episodes where people are going to have to come back to it to go like, okay, what was that one again? So I think we should just start at the top, which on that menu of early options, and when we say early, we mean as opposed to regular decision. But on that menu of early options, you tell me, where do you think we should begin?
Well, there's a lot of them, like you said, and it is very confusing. I think the earlier families and students familiarize themselves with what their options are, the better this tends to go. So we'll start at the beginning, which is early decision one and two. So early decision one applications are typically due around November 1st. Some deadlines are different per school, but that's typical. And early decision two is typically due in early January. So to start with early decision one, this is binding. So if a student is sending an early decision one application, they're telling the school, here I am, you are my top choice. If you admit me, I am going to your institution and happy to do so. So you have to be aware that that is what you're signing up for, and you have to position yourself appropriately and for submitting an application like that.
So we're going to talk about how, like, later in the podcast, I know you and I've already said, like, let's get the menu of options out of the way, and we're going to talk about, you know, how to position yourself and how to tackle this. But I have a question for you. It's binding. So if admitted, you must go and you must withdraw all of your applications from other colleges. So you'll never get admission decisions from most of your other colleges that you applied to. Who do you recommend early decision one or two? Because they're both binding, and we'll talk a little bit about early decision two in a second. But What's like the ideal candidate for early decision one or two, or let's just stick with early decision one, because I sometimes have students say to me like, oh, I think I'm going to do early decision. And then we start to talk and I'm like, that student's not clear enough, in my opinion, to really throw in an early decision application. So just because they offer it doesn't mean you should do it. So who's the ideal candidate for that?
Absolutely. Those are good points. I think prior to even having this conversation, what students need to do is their research. So they need to look at a university's common data set online. All you have to do is Google university common data set. What that does, or individual websites, but what those do is they show the metrics, the soft factors, other things that students who were admitted to these universities demonstrated for successful admission. So things like GPA, test scores, I could list off a million, but there's a ton of information that you can find from the common data set to show what kind of a student is going to this university. Then what you want to do, especially if you're, you know, at the time where you're ready to apply to colleges, you need to honestly look at yourself and say, do I meet these metrics? Not only do I meet them, but am I exceeding them, really? As far as a resume goes, as far as the strength of my personal essay and that goes, do I feel like I, in my opinion, like I am exceeding what this school's typical applicant does so that I can feel super confident in sending in a competitive application? So the type of person that should consider ED is somebody that feels really strongly A, about that school, like this is where I want to go. I'm showing you, you are where I want to go. That gives them an edge. But then also, I have really prepared myself to send you a competitive application.
Yeah, I had a student say to me the other day, I think I'm going to throw an ED into, I'm not going to pick on any schools today. So it's easy to pick on schools, but we're going to try to keep it clean and not do that. Uh-huh. And I'm like, have you visited there? She's like, no. I said, you know, that's a really early decisions, a really big deal because it is binding. And I don't believe that every student needs to go to every campus that they're going to apply to. But my personal opinion is that if you're going to ED at a school, you probably should have seen that campus.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree, because it more than just the metrics, more than just your scores, you have to know, does this feel right? Like, could I see myself being happy here as a person for 4 years in addition to everything else I offer?
Right. And by the way, you were talking about the importance of the common data set in assessing kind of that academic fit, you know, how competitive you are. I have a quick video that I shot one time after one of our guests. I think it was when in January of 2022, we had a guest on, we talked about demonstrated interest. And so I shot a quick video to show how to access the common data set to see if demonstrated interest matters. But for Julie's giving great advice, like go out there and dig into the wealth of information in the common data set. And I will link in our show notes to that video that I shot that just shows you how to find it. Not all of them can be found, but it's a few quick steps. I think my video is like less than 5 minutes. So,
oh yeah, that's super helpful.
Yeah. So, okay. So early decision two, also binding. Let's talk a little bit about that one.
Right. So like I said, early decision two is typically due in early January. A lot of schools don't publish the information about early decision two and how many people they're accepting ED2. I think it's safe to say that if a school offers ED1 and ED2, about 50% are accepted ED2 as opposed to what they accepted in ED1.
So 50% of the ED1 rate, is that
50%, yes, of the ED1 rate is accepted in ED2 typically, though it's hard to find those.
It is hard to find, but still an admission advantage over regular most cases.
Absolutely. I mean, you're still showing a school like you're at the top of my list or one of the top of my list. This is where I want to be. I mean, honestly, think about it. If you're applying early to a school, especially ED1 or two, you're flattering them a little bit. You're telling them like, you know, I'm putting it on the line here. You're where I want to be. And those admissions officers are going to have a little more time to review you and your application and to notice your strengths in a way that might be more difficult in the regular decision pool with tons and tons of people like you.
So I think that's a great point. There's going to be fewer applicants. They're going to be able to take more time. I tell students all the time, I'm like, the average amount of time on a read for an application is, I always quote 6 to 9 minutes. Do you quote the same?
Yeah, I say about 8 typically. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So right in the middle. And then I see this look just like wash over their face. Like, are you kidding me? I am pouring my heart and soul into this essay or these essays. And I've worked so hard on my grades and my extracurriculars and my recommendation letter. And I'm like, yep. So
yeah.
Everybody hear that. You've got about 8 minutes that those college admissions officers are reading it, but they might be able to give you a little bit more time if you're applying early.
Absolutely. And they're skilled at what they do. I think that they know how to have a keen eye for what to look for as long as you present it accurately. So,
absolutely. Is there anybody for whom you would say like, I want to back up. Another point I wanted to make was not every school offers early decision.
Right. That's absolutely true. There's some that are only early action and regular decision. There's a handful out there that are only regular decision. And then there's some that have a very strange early admit called SCEA or REA. These are kind of your top, top level schools. We can dig into that.
That's a great segue into we're leaving the binding. There's nothing else is binding. Are the only two. Early decision one, early decision two. If admitted, you withdraw all of your other applications. You must go there. And now let's notch it down a half a step. I really feel like it's not even a full step down. It's like a half a step down, right?
No, I completely agree because, well, let's talk about why. SCEA, single choice early action offered at schools like Princeton and Yale. Essentially, yes, it is non-binding. However, they're super restrictive in who else you can apply to. So SCE plans do not allow a student to apply anywhere else early decision. And they do not allow a student to apply early action to any other private university. Students can apply early action to any public university of choice. So what they're saying is you can apply early to us. You don't have to let us know right away if you want to come here. You can let us know on May 1st like everyone else, but you aren't allowed to apply anywhere else early. Essentially,
that's right.
Early decision or early decision two or anything else. So it's yield protective, meaning it typically the person that's going to send in an SCEA application is by way of doing that, telling the school, likely I'm going to say yes if I get in.
That's right.
Yeah. And REA, similar, restrictive early action offered by places like Notre Dame, Harvard, Stanford. There's a couple others. You cannot apply anywhere else, ED, if you submit an REA application. You can apply early action anywhere else. Again, it's non-binding, but because of how restrictive it is, they're semi-assuming that these are the students that are going to accept.
Right. I mean, it does remove that pressure of, I have to go. Because sometimes I'm talking to students and I'm like, you know, you're not a good ED candidate. Like, I mean, you and I work with so many kids. We can sense when it's a good fit for ED with that binding piece. And, you know, I don't feel that way with anything single choice early action or restrictive early action because you're removing that binding. Teenagers change their minds all the time. I've raised a few of them myself, and get ready, Julie, yours will too.
Oh, no. No doubt.
So a good segue into the next full step down now. So now we're away from that really protective, you know, more just the protective and the binding will be early action. And I want to point out for early decision and restrictive early action, you are permitted to apply to public universities that are early action. So that is an exception. So it's the public piece, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So talk about early action.
Yeah. So early action is, it is non-binding like some of the others. However, there are a lot of advantages. So these applications are typically due early to mid-November. Again, you're given a little bit more time. Your admissions officer gives you a little bit more time with your application to see your strengths and to dig into who you are a little bit more. And you are notified earlier if you've been accepted. But again, because it's non-binding, you don't owe them an answer as to whether or not you're going to attend until May 1st, just like the regular decision pool. But we do advise students that if a school offers an early action option, and it's not a school they've chosen for early decision, to go ahead and apply under that option. It does give them a little bit of an advantage.
Well, not only does it give a little bit of an advantage, but I know, so I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio. We have a lot of public universities in our state and privates. Uh-huh. We have a lot of schools, period. But at some of the public early actions, you do not get scholarship consideration either at all or full scholarship consideration if you don't meet an early action deadline at many of these public schools. So, and that's merit-based need, not need-based, or not merit-based need. That's merit-based aid, not need-based aid.
Right.
But, you know, you want to be, hey, as a mom who I have my last payment for college for our last kid coming up this December, you will hear me all the way in your house doing a little cheer. Yes, my last payment. Just made my second to last payment. My daughter's is entering her senior year now. But, you know, I'm always like any of us, I don't care how affluent you are or not. Everybody wants to be at the front of the line for free money if they're handing it out. So why would you not do that early action?
Absolutely. There's so many advantages. Again, a couple things to consider. One is doing your research, because you want, before you're ever making decision plans or admit decision plans, before you send in your applications, you have to know everything about what is required or what's going to give you a leg up. The other thing too is I do think that there is a place for private advisors in this sort of realm, because they know this. We as advisors know these things and can guide students in this way to help them for the optimal result. So it can be a lot of information to consume, but you can do it in a way that makes it a little bit easier. Seek out some help.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're in a position where, particularly if you're at a public high school where the counselor to student ratio is high, if you can afford it, getting some help like what you do, Julie, is immensely helpful, because then it's less like digging around and doing all of the things, because we know this type of stuff in our head and we've got our fingers on the pulse of it for
sure. Of course, absolutely.
So let's talk about strategy. Those are, you know, so there's the early decision, restrictive, early action and regular admission. So that's kind of the whole menu of options. Mm-hmm. And this is the part that people have to go back and listen to probably again. But how do you advise when you're working with a family? What advice do you give to them on strategizing this piece and how it affects working on applications and essays?
Absolutely. So I think I'm going to start with you here, like I would start with them, and I'd give some stats because I think it's eye-opening and I think it's super valuable. So a couple things to keep in mind are oftentimes if you put yourself in an early admit type of pool, you have a much better chance at admission. Last cycle, Johns Hopkins accepted 6% overall, but 20% ED. NYU, wow. 8% overall, 27.8% early. And I think this is the most shocking. American University accepted 44% overall and 86% early, meaning of the students who sent an early application to American, 86% of them got in. So yeah. That's the strategy, is if you have the right tools, it could give you a huge advantage.
Absolutely. So then I know you had mentioned earlier to me when we were offline about some kids make this mistake of casting a really wide net in applying to 15 or 20 schools. I see it too. I think, you know, I'm a huge advocate and supporter of teens, and that is very stressful. And I want them to not have that added stress. But beyond that, what's kind of your advice to them? Because I know you're against 20 schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my advice is, in the landscape that we are in, colleges want to see that they are accepting kind of an already expert in a certain area of interest into their school to join their community. So it's more advantageous for a student to focus on really honing in and creating a super high level, high value application to their two or three early schools that they're considering, as opposed to like a generally attended to list of 25 applications. So really focus, I think, is key.
Focus, which is going to result in polished in an easier time.
Absolutely.
So this is fantastic. We needed this handbook. Anything that I forgot, Julie?
I don't think so, Lisa. This is a good conversation. It's a good time of year too, I think, for people to be considering.
I think, you know, What I see a lot of times is it's not until right before or in the midst of applications, right before students are getting ready to submit, that they start having these conversations like, should I do an ED? Does it make sense? Where I would say, if you have a sophomore or a junior, look this information up.
Absolutely.
Now, because while things are in flux with like test optional policies and things are in flux even with college essays and, you know, AI is all the rage these days. How's that going to impact things? These policies of admission plans, if a school already has ED, they're probably going to still offer ED. And those are things that don't change. So you can think about that strategy early on, you know, while you're doing your visits.
Absolutely. And if you don't meet the metrics or the soft factors right now as a freshman or sophomore, well, now that you've educated yourself, you have time to maybe make something possible for you that might not have been otherwise.
Amazing. Great advice. Okay, Julie. So if people want to connect with you, if they're like, I need some help and Julie might be the person for me, where can they find you?
Absolutely. So again, we are Great Minds Advising, which is the college advising wing of Westchester Prep Tutoring Company in Westchester County. So www.westchesterprep.com. If you go to services, you will see college advising there. You can also find us on as Great Minds Advising on Facebook and on Instagram, and you can also join our newsletter. So please reach out.
Awesome. Okay, Julie. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
I'm thankful for Julie's insights today on a topic that is one of the more confusing ones when it comes to college applications. For your College Bound Challenge this week, I'm going to start with a question. Do you have a spreadsheet where you're tracking your teens' colleges of interest? Julie mentioned doing your research and keeping track of everything. If you're in my Launch Career Clarity course, you do have a spreadsheet that's already set up for you. It's inside Module 5 of where I teach students how to find the colleges that offer their best fit major. And if you're not with us, if you don't have a spreadsheet, start one yet, or better yet, join us inside Launch. We have information in the show notes. And now for the action that I want you to take after you answer that question. In a column on your spreadsheet that you already have or you're going to set up, I want you to record the options for college application deadlines. Then head to the college website to read the fine print if you are considering early decision or restrictive early action applications. It can vary slightly among schools. Now you understand the strategy behind the choice your teen will make in the fall of their senior year. Was this episode helpful to you? If so, I'm going to ask if you could do me two quick favors. First, rate or review the podcast where you are listening today. And secondly, you're probably on your phone, so take a quick screenshot and then post it on social so I can help more families move from overwhelmed and confused to motivated, clear, and confident about their teen's future. Thank you for listening to College and Career Clarity.